Although I'm considered a trans man at the moment, most of my life I sort of thought I was a lesbian. That was where I thought I was, and that's where I fitted in on the scene. I didn't go to school in London, although I was born here and lived here till I was six. So I came back to London when I was 17. I actually got involved in an anti-nuclear protest outside Greenham Common. And that's what brought me to meet other women in London. And so I did go to some of the bars, some of the first bars there were.
I know it's outside London, but would you tell me a bit about your experience at Greenham?
Oh. Well, I mean, I lived there for about a year and a half.
Did you, on site?
Yes. Oh, it was quite a big experience emotionally and on many levels. It was very empowering, but on the other side it was quite frightening as well, and not a very secure place to live. And I got involved in actions and went to prison, and it was all very big, it just took over my life. And then it was quite difficult to get to leave it, actually. It was difficult to sort of get integrated back into normal society again.
What drew you there? Did you know some people who were there?
No, I'd read about it and I just thought it was amazing what they were doing. And I'd been involved in C&D and I was really worried about what the likelihood of a limited nuclear war in Europe, so I got involved with that. But Then I wanted to leave, and I sort of tried to get more involved in the London scene, really, you know. And then I managed to get onto the London College course at the London College of Printing. That was quite odd, though, because that was all men, and I'd just come from an environment where it was all women.
Oh yeah,
and. It was quite odd, because during the day I'd just be surrounded by men and male lecturers as well, and then in the evenings I'd go off to the bars. I mean, I didn't go to the bar every night, but you know, because I suppose I sort of had a delayed teenage years, and I went to a few, and the Carver Red Lion. A lot of it was focused in Islington at the time. There was the Carved Red Lion, which was a small cellar bar, which was open every night a week.
The Carved?
Carved Red Lion. It's just at the bottom end of Essex Road. Mm-hmm. It's still a sign on the top of the pub. I forget what it's called now, because it's changed names a couple of times since then. And it was quite forward-thinking for its time, because on a Thursday evening they had a non-smoking night, which I thought was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of on the lesbian feminist scene, I never went to the famous or infamous gateways, and I regret it now, because I wish I'd just seen with my own eyes what it was like. But I only went to the Carved Red Lion and then later Racketts. And these clubs like Racketts and Martinez were set up to as sports. Well, Racketts was specifically set up as like a sports club to put people off thinking it was a lesbian club. It was like a sports club. So it was just for sports women, the first Racketts one. And at least that's what I understood it to be. But Martinez was a bit different later on.
Where was Martinez?
Well, Martinez was in the Market Tavern in Vauxhall.
Oh, of course, yes.
On a Monday night, we got the lesbians, we got the best night. But the Racketts was good. It was on a Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. I can't remember if it was on a Saturday. It moved to the Pied Bull, which was just on Liverpool Road as it joins Islington High Street. Yeah. And but Islington was a very happening place for alternative. You had Sister Right.
Yes.
Feminist bookshop. And with,
did you used to go there?
Yes, I did, because before the internet, the only way you'd find out what was going on would be to sign up to local newspapers or look at the notice boards. And also, if you were looking to find somewhere to live or all those sorts of things, you'd look up on the notice board in these sort of places. I was involved with somebody, and I was very clear right at the front about how I identified. Not that I was going to transition, because I didn't think I would. When I met her, I said I was just very male identified. Is that a problem? And no, it wasn't. And we're still friends now. But it was very difficult when I decided to do it. It was almost like automatic. It was obvious that we'd split up, and then 3 months later, she got in touch, and we got back together again. And we tried to carry it on. So I think we had a really strong emotional connection, and that was, you know, we're still friends now. We did finally end it after a while, and I've had other relationships since with. Women who don't consider themselves lesbians as well. That was quite nice in a way to have that change. Because obviously I can't really go out with a lesbian. It doesn't make sense if you think about it. Because that was what I realised is there's no point. If I go out with a lesbian, most lesbians want to go out with other women. It's sort of obvious when you put it out. In other words, women who have people who have women's bodies, and I didn't have that anymore, and I never liked having a woman's body in the first place. So it wouldn't really work. And I think thinking about it like that made me more aware.
And back in the old days, but even the times we remembered, like the early 80s, there was more of a butch femme thing going on. So did that mean you had to identify as...
Well, no, because I was from the lesbian feminist wing, and we didn't have any truck with that and thought of it all as copying heterosexuality, which I think was a bit narrow looking back on it. But having said that, sometimes I identified as butch as well. I was really not very clear. Sometimes I said that I was a butch to some women. But the funny thing is that I wasn't really that butch as well, and I didn't really like being butch. It's quite complicated. Sometimes I got into wearing lipstick. So then I became a lipstick lesbian for a little while. And so that was quite odd. Yes, and, you know, like I said, I'm still a feminist. It's just that I went a bit into the separatist direction in the early 80s. I think a lot of people did then.
Tell me at all about that.
It's really difficult to say, but it's just like when you start looking at things through those glasses, the feminist glasses, you just see how everywhere... men have it. Well, I don't want to say everywhere, because now obviously I've seen it from the other side. It's not in most areas of life, you know, there's really quite severe oppression.
It strikes me you just must have an amazing perspective now, having seen things from so many different angles. Must have given you some
although advice. I haven't been brought up as a boy, I've only sort of seen, and I think as an adult you get treated very differently. I think as a young man it's really tough, as you probably are aware. Assaults happen more on young men than anybody in any other category. Young women, middle or older, young men, they suffer quite badly. So I didn't have to endure that, and I sort of had the respect given to me as an older man. Those sorts of things are interesting. Mm. The whole cultural stuff, buying women for drinks and everything, that's all a bit old-fashioned, I think. You know, because I'm still a feminist and I believe in equality. It's quite difficult because you can't now. I talked to my brother about this, and he says, "Oh, he just always buys it." I sort of can see that now. It's easier. Like before, I would say, "No, it's okay. I'll buy my own," and be very firm about it. But now I can't say, "You buy your own," because it comes across horrible, and it doesn't seem nice at all. So I've started doing what he does. which is, in, you know, say I'll buy it, unless they like what I used to be. I said, no, I'll buy it. I'll do it. Well, I always found the Q, as in queer, I never related to that. Mm. I still don't really understand what it means. People say it's political, and you can be, but, and then I hear, you know, you can be straight and queer. Well, if you can be straight and queer and non-trans, you know, cisgendered, then you're just like, it's everybody, it includes everybody. It doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, I is very different. Intersex people, and they have really suffered human rights at a big scale. And part of me wonders whether they should be like really pushed to the forefront. Mm-hmm. This is what we're getting quite involved in the Green Party at the moment, because intersex people, you know, unlike myself, I purposely wanted operations, but imagine having operation. And it'd be, a lot of people think, oh, it just happens when you're a baby, but it carries on throughout your adolescence against your will. It's really quite horrific. So I'm very much for the I, and then there's the A. Well, the asexual people now, or the agendered people now, I have difficulty getting my head around this, because I can't see the same level of oppression for somebody who is asexual. Okay, they may be pressurised into being married or having a relationship, and they don't want one, but is it at the same level as somebody who's lesbian or gay and gets beaten up when they walk down the streets?
Mm. And what about trans people? How far do you think the trans movement has come?
Well, a long way in some ways. You know, we've got legal rights now, but there are lots of issues with it, because some people feel like you shouldn't have to prove that you're trans in order to get a certificate, and you should just identify as you wish. And I can see there's some merit in that, but at the same time, I sort of think that having a legal identity is important as well. I was very pleased, and as soon as they changed the law, as soon as I could, I got all my documents changed.
Well, was there a period, because I'm just going by other people I've talked to, where you had to, during your transition, you had to dress as a man over a certain time?
The dreaded real-life experience.
What was that like for you?
which makes me laugh, really, because if you just put it in reverse, you say, okay, so you transition when you're, like, say, 20, so you've had 20 years of experience in the body. You know you definitely don't want that. And so they say, well, you've got to try this other one, whereas, you know. So I skipped it, basically.
How did you do that?
Well, I just went private. I went privately.
Right.
to get the hormones first, right. And then I went back in the system later to get funding for lower surgery, because it was really expensive. There was no way I could afford that. Mm. So I didn't want to do all that.
So was it one day?
I didn't want to say to people I'm a man when, you know, I was didn't look really much like a man, just wearing man's clothes. And I think it's all a bit pathetic that you have to try and convince people. Mm. And I think it's a bit cruel, really.
Mm. So how did you do it?
How did I do? Well, I went to see a private psychiatrist who was more willing to give out hormones earlier. So you didn't have to do 1 year or 2 years or anything. I think it was about 3 months.
And was there a time or a day or a month where you said, now I'd like to be recognised as a man?
Oh, yes. I chose the... I had my first injection in October 2002. And I said, right, let's get it organised. We tell all the suppliers. I told all work in October, you know, round about that time, October, November. And I said, right, we'll tell work and everybody. Tell the suppliers and the customers on January. So I chose January because it's a good time as ever, you know, it's the new January the 1st, 2003 it would have been, yeah. And I got all my documents changed then.